Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
He threw a two-handed pass over his head that hit the backboard on the other end of the court. The greatest outlet passer ever, one of the most underrated players ever. And Kevin Lockery, who was a guard on that team, was once asked when he stopped running on the fast break, knowing Wes can't get it to him. And he said, when I reach the other end line. Because any other moment, the ball just might appear like a howitzer.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, Michael and I are here, sitting 6 feet apart at my Uncle Benny's table. You will hear Chessie the dog at various points barking at people who go by. Sean's at his house, Nigel's at his house, and we are very grateful that Leon Harris is joining us this morning, who anchors at Channel 4.
From his house.
And from Leon's house, yes, which is better than having to go to the studio. And there's, you know, there's in essence, there's a lot of questions to ask, but there's one question that I find most interesting, and I'm sure you have thought about it for weeks now. Mm-hmm. How have you felt covering this? How have you felt as you witness what appears to be the potential for deep social change, and addresses some of the things that you have gone through in your own life? How have you felt watching it?
That's a great question. God, and we could talk about that for an hour and a half, because it's sort of a maelstrom of different emotions and ideas and thoughts and feelings about where my thoughts and feelings and experiences should influence what I'm thinking and doing every day, and where I'm supposed to be standing apart from all of that. The thing is, at the very beginning of this, I'm ashamed to say that at the very beginning, I didn't think this was going to be that big of a deal. You know, I kept thinking, well, this is one of these kind of deals. It's going to be one of these momentary spasms that we've seen this country have. We've been through this how many times? Whether it's been through Trayvon Martin or Freddie Gray or, you know, Eric Garner. Even going stepping outside of the racial arena, even Sandy Hook, we sat and watched 20 elementary school kids get gunned down, mowed down by somebody with an automatic weapon. And within 3 weeks, a month or so later, we're back into having the same arguments or the same conversations that we normally have in this country. This time around, it's been different, and I didn't see it. I really didn't see it coming. Not until I talked to my son. My son lives in Seattle, and Seattle is sort of Seattle is a great sort of a cow catcher, you know, that contraption that's on the front of every train that you saw in the old days that makes the first impact. They got slammed by the coronavirus first, and they went into lockdown. But they also happen to be a region of the country that is accustomed to protest, and they've got a representation of the political spectrum that really far exceeds everything we see here in D.C., believe it or not. And when my son from Seattle was telling me that this is different, and this is something that is radicalizing people his age in ways that we're not appreciating, I thought, yeah, sure, that's what you say. That's what we all said when we were 25, 27,
that's
29
right.
years
that's
old.
That's right.
But this has had a staying power, and the leadership or the lack of leadership has sort of exposed this in a way that we've never had happen before in the other spasms. Think about what happened in the other events with Trayvon Martin and Eric Garner. We had leadership that sort of kept a cap on things in this country. In this case, we have leadership that is exposing it by their absence. We've got leadership that is adept at pulling scabs and not at learning how to heal. Or learning how to apply a salve or a balm to the nation's problems. And that has sort of accelerated what my people of my son's generation are fed up with. They're feeling it, they're fed up with it, and they're speaking out in ways that, thanks to social media, that we couldn't do before in our generations. And it's taken on a life that I didn't see coming, and I feel bad. I feel almost ashamed to admit that publicly. But at the same time, I'm just amazed and proud to be able to sit here and watch it happen, because this is something that I know my grandkids are going to be reading about in their history books.
So let me ask the obvious question, and the one that perhaps you struggle with. because you are a black man in this culture and someone of renown and stature. Do you want to join this in some way? Do you feel that your job prevents you from joining this in some way? Or do you say, no, it's not mine, it's someone else's at this point? And do you then resent if someone asks that question?
Yes, yes, no, and no. yes, I wish I could be out there in it, but I also understand that my responsibility, if I'm to be taken seriously as someone who is going to be helping people guide their own thinking on it, I have to be somewhat objective, and I've got to be somewhat removed. And you can't be part of the story if you're going to, unless you're forced to be. You know, if I happen to be driving down the street, or I happen to be going to pick up some dinner, and then I get arrested, or I get beaten, or I get a knee on my neck. Then, you know, that's a whole different situation. But I can't to impose myself into a story while I'm trying to tell it to people. Then that's distracting. That does not allow them to actually formulate their own thinking about it. But at the same time, I recognize it's history being made right in front of me. And you kind of want to see that. If this was 1968, it'd be so hard to sit there on the sidelines after seeing, you know, Martin getting shot or Bobby getting shot and watching my neighborhood get burned down, and then for me to pretend like there's nothing that's affecting me or I'm not a part of it, that would be so hard to do. And in this case, it is kind of hard to do because I know the reason why this is happening is because of people having to deal with the same thing I deal with every day, and that's walking outside of your door looking like you look, and having to deal with whatever comes with that. So I would love to be part of that, but I can't. Because if I do, it sort of distracts from the job I've got, you know, and I understand that. And I just hope that I get a chance to get a piece of it, you know, and at the same time, as a journalist, you have to, it's the toughest thing in the world sometimes, you know. When you're covering the Olympics, it's kind of a different thing. You get to cheer for the team that you're there to cover, right?
Well, quietly, not publicly, but quietly. You cannot suppress your emotions. I've got to assume that there are tugs on you personally in this that there are not on me, and that you're always aware of that. I wonder, I've texted a few people. We're all sort of afraid to talk out loud because you don't know how what you say is going to be taken. But I've texted a few people and I've said, God, it feels like regime change to me. I don't want to go overboard, but it feels like that. It feels like this is significant and serious and that I don't know what's going to happen next. And I wonder if you feel that way.
Well, here's one of the things that I think is great. The fact that you are moved enough to actually reach out and talk to somebody about it. That's the problem that we've had, and that's brought us to this point. White people have been so uncomfortable talking about this. And this is one of the things that my son made clear to me is the reason why people are filling the streets right now is because white people for decades have always said, don't talk to me like that. Don't tell me about this problem like this. It's like, if you take a knee on a field or during a national anthem, don't do that. Don't do that to me. Don't talk to me like that. Don't show me that you're upset that way. If you go and you march, don't do that. You're disrupting things. You're making things, you're upsetting the order. Don't do that. Don't do it that way. Well, it's like, well, what way do you want me to tell you something's wrong? What way do you want me to tell you that you need to do something about this too? It's not up to the oppressed to fix the oppressors or fix the oppression. And so what is it that you need me to do? And you're saying that I have to tell it to you in a way that's going to make you comfortable? Well, if you're comfortable, you're not going to change. You're not going to do anything. So what's got to happen is that people have got to become accustomed to having these uncomfortable conversations. The only way you get past it is to do it. And the way it happens is by people like you, by the example you just said, that you just said with the comment you just made about you reaching out to talk to people. That's all we're saying. That's all we're saying. And it's not just doing lip service. It's not just, you know, making some sort of photo op. It's like actually having a conversation with somebody. That's the only way it's going to, that the whole thing is going to change. But you got it, to have a conversation means you have to respect the person you're having a conversation with.
So I was actually having this conversation yesterday outside with somebody I've known for a long time, and we were talking about how long might this go on, and we both said, well, there are no jobs, there's no school, there's no reason for this to stop. There's no reason.
You've seen the numbers, and you've expressed the same sentiment yourself, where you're not comfortable going out to a restaurant yet anyway. You know, the numbers show that more than 50% of the people, of the public, isn't ready to actually completely reopen anyway. So they're not, you know, all, it's not like there's this pent up desire, like where there's 300 million people who just can't wait to get back to life as usual. They're willing to take their time going back. So if they're going to take their time and going back to life as usual, maybe this is perfect time for this sort of spasm to happen. All right. So we can have this conversation where there's no pressure to say, well, sorry, it was nice talking to you, but I got to get back to work. You know, nice talking to you, but I got to go get something to eat.
Right.
And these young people who are out there in the streets, for them, this really is, for them, it's kind of hard to imagine, but for you and me, maybe going back to our youth, I grew up, I was just barely young enough to remember all the violence from '68. I was 9 years old, 7 years old at the time. And I do remember riots in Cleveland and Akron growing up. I do remember that because there were buildings burning like two blocks away from where I was, where we were living at the time. But, you know, it's the feeling at that time kind of mirrors what's happening right now, because it's young people and they're saying, okay, but here's the thing that's different. That's you look at the video of some of these protests, there were more white girls out there than there were black guys. and you're thinking, wait a second, the demographics of the protests that we're seeing right now are completely different. And I think that's one of the things that's got a lot of the older intelligentsia and the older establishment here a little concerned, because they're not familiar with this. It looks completely different.
Leon, do you sense that there will be opposition to this, or do these changes go through? Is there something where you go, no, that's too radical, we can't have that, but these things are good? Or is there any sense that there's people out there sort of waiting and they'll be opposed to it?
Well, Tony, you have to ask yourself, who does opposition to this benefit?
That's I understand politically who it benefits. I understand that.
And that's the whole thing. And this is, we have leadership right now, and I'm just going to use that word. We have leadership right now that is sort of like a caged animal, a cornered animal that is willing to do anything in order to strike and to survive. And if that means burning everything down or completely destroying the order or an orderly way out of this particular point in history, then they've demonstrated they are perfectly willing to do that. But at the same time, on the other side, it seems like there is such an accumulation of momentum on the other side to truly make sure that this is a different moment. Again, I'm serious. I'm convinced that, and I didn't believe this as recently as a week ago, but I believe it now. This is something that my grandkids are going to be reading about in their history books. Online in their distance learning classes.
The schools will never open again.
Schools are never going to open again. Yeah.
Thank you, Leon. Thank you so much for being on. Please continue to do the work on four that you're doing. I appreciate it.
And Tony, thank you as a black man. Thank you for having the conversation, and thank you for being open to doing it, because you set an example by you doing it. You have no idea. What you're doing is you're telling other people, it's okay to do this. It's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to
be
ask
good.
Questions.
We'll All talk right. soon. Thank you, Leon. Leon Harris, boys and girls. Michael Wilbon, I believe, will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. It's new copy every week with them. Which is good. With everything going on right now, a lot of people are asking if it's even possible to buy life insurance at all. The short answer is yes, you can buy life insurance during a pandemic, and if you have loved ones depending on your income, you probably should. As an insurance marketplace, Policy Genius is in contact with the life insurance companies on their platform every day. They're keeping track of all the changes in the market so you don't have to, which means they can get you covered quickly and for the best price. Here's how it works. Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies in one place. It takes just a few minutes to compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. This doesn't just save a lot of legwork. You could save $1,500 or more a year. It's money. By using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and red tape for free. So if you hit any speed bumps during the application process, they will be there to take care of everything. So if you're one of the many people looking to buy life insurance right now, but you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and hopefully give you one less thing to worry about.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song called Wake Up, Wake Up. It's by someone you're very familiar with who has a new name. Brandon S. Bowker has changed his name to Brandon Costello. He's still in Lexington, Kentucky, and he's still a singer and a songwriter. He's going to do two songs for us today. It's hard for me to get used to that.
And Jeannie's not happy about
when
this.
When they change, people change their names. But I got used to it with Lou Alcindor and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So over some period of time, I guess I'll be able to do it. Michael Wilbon joins us from Arizona. You were just on Good Morning America?
Yes, I was. I was on with Robin.
What did you talk about?
I'll give you one guess.
Okay. Was it your own personal reflections, or was it anything in an athletic context?
Lend some, I guess, sports-like perspective to a show which has a different audience about, Roger Goodell / Drew Brees / the league / Kaepernick / kneeling going forward. So all the above, and did that segment with Robin, and so... I said yes because I was going to be up with you anyway. So what was the difference between 4:30 a.m. locally and 5 a.m. locally? Not much.
It's not that much of a difference. So I got to tell you this story. So yesterday, about 2 o'clock, I'm walking the dog. I'm walking Chessie. And somebody in a car that actually looks like he stole it off a lot. It's just like the oldest car I've ever seen. Turns around a big sweeping turn, and I look, it's Neville.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's Neville. And so we start to talk.
Not that old, by the way.
Well, it doesn't look good. He's got a new car.
Neville doesn't go through the car wash as often as he should. So I can tell you the car is not that old. It's not even 10 years old. It's like 5 years old.
It looks old. Okay, I'm just telling you, it looks old.
Yeah.
So he says, "She says you're walking the dog, just like you say." And I said, "Yeah, I'm walking the dog. This is what happens." And he says hello to Chessie, and I tell him that you had told me that he was keeping you up to date on everything that was happening in Washington, D.C. And he said, "Did you play?" And I said, "I just played." He said, "All right, I'm going to Falls Road." And I looked and I just thought to myself, "You're nowhere near Falls Road, Neville." And we talked about, we talked about the podcast and we talked about all the stuff that, people are saying and people are wanting and whether it was possible and whether it made sense and all of those things. And I just got such a kick out of chatting with him. And he said how you were at rapt attention, like, whatever he said to you, you were really taking in because you were, 2,000 miles away. So,
yeah. Neville's been, like I said, you're not going to get straight Washington news out here,
right?
So I would call a few people, but Neville was the first call usually. Yeah, as called you as well a number of times over the last 10 days.
Yep,
and you two guys, and maybe a couple other people. I've called to say, what the F is going on there? What's it look like? What's it sound like? And Neville one night gave me play-by-play on like a store burning.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, this is like...
Well, Neville lives in Georgetown.
He could see, and he's got proximity to a lot of stuff that was happening, certainly on, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of last week. So, wow.
So of all the things that we talked about, and it's interesting because we just had Leon Harris on before you, and Leon made this same point. Of all the things that we talked about, and Neville and I agreed on, you know, 95% of what was going on. But the thing that sort of makes you step back and go, wow, is the mixture of so many young people involved in this. You had called it, I think, the Rainbow Coalition on TV the other day.
Yeah.
The great mix of this that you go, I don't know that I've seen that before.
Well, hearing people that are older than both of us compare it to the 1960s.
Yep.
Is and talk about how, I mean, they talk about it being more powerful and more necessary or just as necessary. And you and I have said on TTI, and I'm sure you've said it on the podcast, we didn't think we'd live, didn't want to see it, a time where you had to have this turnout. If there is something that, I know you are more encouraged by this than I am.
I am. I am.
And it's good. It's good that
you're that doesn't mean I don't have trepidation, because I do,
right,
or anxiety, because right, I do, but I am encouraged, yes.
Yeah. I don't have anxiety. I just have doubt.
Yeah.
You know, I have doubt, because I think that, you know, I don't know what to make of, like, Roger Goodell's videotape.
I told you that was coming.
I told Cheryl when it happened. When I saw the tape, I was with Cheryl. I think we were just sitting outside here at the house, and I just said, Tony got this entirely right. I said Goodell might say yes to 60%, and Tony immediately said, no, every one of these things we met. And
word for word.
It all.
Yeah.
Howard Bryant, I would recommend Howard Bryant.
I read it. I read it. Howard Bryant piece on ESPN. And Howard Bryant makes the point. He says, look, this is all well and good, but if you don't mention Colin Kaepernick by name, you're not addressing it, right?
Now, maybe there's something in the settlement. Maybe there's something where Goodell feels he can't say it, but it does. Howard makes that point, and it resonates with me. Because the NFL looks so bad. The NFL looks worse than the NHL, which has, you know, 20 black players, max. The NFL looked so bad. The last time the NFL was talked about in the national context was 2 weeks earlier, when they can't even get it right when it comes to hiring black coaches and GM. And now all of a sudden they want to be seen differently. And there's so much we don't know. We still haven't heard from owners yet.
And that's right.
You know, there's a dozen owners, I think, who will embrace this almost like Goodell, if not as much, if not more. And they'll say, I got it wrong. And then there's guys like Jerry Jones.
Jerry Jones is the big one.
You can't work for me. You can't work for the Dallas Cowboys if you do this. And let me tell you, Tony, see, here's why I'm not as optimistic as you are. Because this is coming to a head. This is not the head. And when I say every day on PTI, these conversations have to be uncomfortable. They have to be confrontational. Tony, nothing good ever happens that isn't hard. If it's easy, it ain't any damn good. All right? So it's got to be hard. And for that to happen, people have to be dislodged. People aren't going to move off their positions. They have to be dislodged from their positions. We're looking at something. If we're going to compare this to the 60s, think of how hard that was. And I think this is harder because people have been in, even with the youth movement, let's just use that phrase for a second, of people under, say, 35, who are just not with the status quo from the 1960s, 70s, 80s. Even if you bring them into the fold and you have all this new energy and young blood and fresh idealism out there, you got people who believe in what Drew Brees said. That doesn't mean they're bad people. It means we're at odds, and the conversations are going to have to be difficult and confrontational.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I think where I'm optimistic is I think that at some point, and I just feel this because of my age, I feel that you get to an age in life and you've accomplished what you accomplished and you actually say, you know what, I will listen. I will listen. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, maybe I need to do something different.
Right.
I think Jerry Jones, I think he's the symbol, and I have more confidence that Jerry Jones is going to be dragged into this era. I do. I think he'll do it, but I don't, you know, I don't know. I wanted to ask you, are you coming home, and anytime soon are you going straight to Orlando?
No, I don't know that I'm going to be assigned to Orlando. That's not up to me.
But you want to go, right? So I assume you want
to. You know, I'd like to go. I don't want to go for 8-12 weeks.
So that's what I was going to. I wanted to ask you this because this is, to me, knowing you as well as I do, are you going to be in the bubble? Or are you going to go, I don't know?
Then you're not going to be in Orlando. You can't. There's no. You don't get a vote. If I'm assigned by the network bosses to go to Orlando, there's no like. Oh, I'm going to stay over here and I'm going to get a rental car. No. You're going to be in one of the hotels there on the ground, and
right.
You're going to stay there. I don't know what the like. Do I think that our big bosses are going to be there the entire time and not come back? No. I think I'm sure they will. Do that. Is Adam Silver going to go and stay 12 weeks? No. I mean,
no.
So, you know, people will come and go, but you're going to get tested every time you do. And even then, I can't imagine whatever media members go, they're going to be there. That's where the story is. The story is not somewhere else. This is going to be the biggest story in sports when that resumes.
Yep.
And so it's going to be an enormous story, enormously watched. Enormously anticipated and fretted over. And so, you know, if I could ideally draw up a schedule, I'd like to go in the playoff start. I don't care as much about
right.
those first eight games, although
right.
I understand the news value. There is great news value in that. But I would love to go, say, from August 20th, when I think the playoffs would start, somewhere around that, to the end of it, whenever that is. October 12th is the day that you have a game 7 of the finals. So, but I don't even know that I'll be asked to do that, Tony. You think they're not, and there's a lot of people covering basketball for the network. And
yeah, but I think you will be.
Maybe.
I'm going to be in this attic for the rest of my life, so
yeah,
it doesn't. It doesn't really matter.
You know, I'll get home before that. But Tony, there's no. What's home?
I mean,
nothing's coming out of ABC Studios.
That's right.
Where I would do it. I wouldn't be in your attic, even though I know you'd welcome me there.
Happy to have you in the attic.
Doing the show there, so there's no set. So we'd have to. I don't know what I just started this process. Of, first of all, figuring out when I'm going to come back, which I think it's going to be a couple more weeks out here. I'm in a boot, and I got to get the boot off before I can even travel.
Yeah.
So it's a couple more weeks in Arizona, and we got a reprieve. We got temperatures in the 80s, which are only about like 20 degrees below average.
About five days.
It's just unbelievable.
We had beautiful weather here yesterday, beautiful today, beautiful tomorrow, and then it'll be 400 degrees. So I'll get you out of here on this. What is it like? You asked Neville, what is it like in Washington? What does it feel like where you are, where the population is physically diffuse, you know, where you don't have any of the sort of crowd circumstances you might in Phoenix, but not where you are. What has it felt like? Does it feel to you like you're looking at something in a foreign land because it's not where you are? Or is it where you are?
When I'm watching, well, here, first of all, I mean, people got too lax. People, you know, the first couple of weeks, people didn't rush back to their attempting their normal ways of life. And the cases were up slightly, but not what was predicted for all the states that are open. Now, you know, Arizona's up there the last 3 days with numbers like Chicago and Washington and New York.
Really?
Because, yeah, oh, yeah. So there was a high of 1,000 one day, 1,000 cases. And then the next day, it went to 1,500. And I don't know what the number was yesterday. It's still early out here to be consuming yesterday's news from late night. But so people just went crazy. I don't mean went crazy as in they all got in a pool like in Missouri. But people just, you know, you go, we don't, like Don came out here from Chicago. He just freaked out. He said, I'm sorry, people out here think the virus isn't here, like it didn't reach Arizona. Because you go to a place and, 40% of people have on masks. And so they're thinking of making something that is mandatory in lots of other big places finally mandatory here in mid-June.
Yeah.
Because people are just like, okay, yeah, we've gone back to our normal way because everything's open. I mean, you know, you can go sit in a restaurant. You can do all that for about the last month. And it's been, the results have been what, you know, experts predicted, which is all these places are opening up too much too quickly. And here's what's going to happen. And that has happened for 3 days now.
Well, the protests amplify that. You know, I mean, yeah. the proximity of people. Sure.
That's right.
Sure.
But the protests weren't, one night there were nearly 300 arrests in Phoenix, which was a complete and total stunner. But, you know, I don't think that's the reason that these cases, the cases coming out of the weekend of marches and protests, those cases haven't been realized yet.
No, that's 2 weeks down the road. Yeah, that's 2 weeks down the road.
Or just maybe a few days down the road, in which case you're going to have another surge. So,
yes, I agree.
You know, it's not, you know, but looking at Washington from here, man, it's just, you know, you see when they're switching scenes on CNN or MSNBC, which is what I watch, and you see familiar sights and you see people, it looks like the militia is on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And it looks like what I left in Hong Kong last summer. It's jarring. It's jarring to see that. And so, I said to you, I'm not in any hurry to rush back home to that.
It's understandable. All right, I'll talk to you. I'll see you later through the magic of whatever these cameras are. All right, I'll see you later.
All right, sounds good, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. Jason LaConfora will join us when we return. He has a very interesting story to tell. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
They want me to talk about a time when you searched for something online you wouldn't want others knowing about. You could take this in a lot of ways that I wouldn't necessarily want to share in this, but how many of us have searched for various symptoms over the last few months, including a little rash that's now on Bootsy's face after an interaction with some sunblock? I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't you just use incognito mode? Now, this is where we need Nigel to cue up that music. Let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history. Your internet service provider can still see every single, now that is underlined and italicized,
every single
website you've ever visited. That's why, even when you're home, never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter if you've got your internet from Verizon or Comcast. Or mention other local ISP offerings. I think I just did. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the time, you don't even realize you have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background and is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is also available on all your devices, phones, computers, and even your smart TV, Dad, so there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/Tony, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Tony, expressvpn.com/Tony. To learn more.
Good job.
Thanks, Dad.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I didn't do it. It's not as bad as you think.
Once again, this is now the new Brandon Costello. Who used to be Brandon S. Bowker, but is now Brandon Boker. See, I pronounced it wrong, so I'm better off saying Costello because I know how to pronounce that. This is Brandon Costello. This is I Will Remain. He's a friend of ours. We're very happy for his success. He plays in Jason LaConfora of CBS Sports. And also, what is the name of the radio show? Is it The Inside Scoop? Is that what it's called?
Inside Access.
Inside Access.
Inside Scoop, though.
Yeah. Well, that could be ice cream as well.
Yeah, we can get some sponsorships going there. Get some Haagen-Dazs or something.
So I was on Jason's show the other day, and it was odd because when I'm introduced, it says, and now with the inside access is Tony Kornheiser. And I looked around because I didn't really have any inside access. But we taped something for Jason's show, and you had told me, not on the air, but you had told me off the air, I told Nigel, that you had a story about a young man named Karan Johnson, and you should tell this story.
Well, yeah, it's just maybe there's somebody out there who's a big in the government who might be able to help this young guy out. But, yeah, it's just kind of an interesting story. And I heard it through his agent, Buddy Baker, who represents a lot of football players, mostly football players, but some basketball players. And Karan played, you know, big-time college basketball. He's been playing professionally in Europe for quite a while. His brother is Kerryon Johnson, the running back from the Lions.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So he's in Romania. And obviously, you know, all hell's breaking loose with the pandemic, and different countries are enacting different sort of rules and regulations about the ability to travel and who can do what. So he gets himself, you know, he tries to line up a flight back to the States. His wife is expecting their first child as well, but he has a dog. The dog's with him. He doesn't have anywhere to put the dog that he feels, you know, safe and secure about. People are leaving the country. People with the team are leaving the country. So he decides he's not going to jump on that flight, that first flight, because he wants to make sure that they're taking care of their dog. And his wife agrees with him. Like, you know, they've had the dog for a while. Everybody loves the dog. So he does secure eventually a friend of a friend who I think was 4 or 5 hours away. Eventually he squares all that away. He's got somebody who's going to stay there with the dog who he trusts, and then eventually ship the, you know, get the proper paperwork and ship the dog back over. But now he can't get any flights out. And his wife was a flight attendant, and so she knows a lot of the sort of means to try to make things happen, and she can't get anything going. And he's not getting really any help at all out of the U.S. Embassy in Romania. So he's basically stuck, and there's no direct flights from Romania over here, and he can't get any sort of temporary visa or any help with getting access to another country somewhere in Western Europe, even if he were to, you know, try to drive, where he could get some of these charter flights and these few international flights that are taking off from, you know, Paris or London or whatever. So right now he's basically stuck, and he may be stuck for, you know, a while. Certainly, I think there's 6 or 8 weeks until his wife is expecting. And then through him kind of starting to tell his story a little bit, it turns out there's a bunch of other American basketball players who are in the same predicament in different parts of the world. And it's a little different in Romania than it is in Western Europe right now. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of get the word out. It's kind of a crazy story. Karan was great talking about it. You can hear the interview if, you know, you just type in Karan Johnson 105.7 The Fan. It'll give you a link to hear the interview. We talked to him from Romania a week ago. Great dude, and hopefully he can get a little help from his country and maybe get access to get out of Romania.
Can I ask the obvious question here, which is, if there's a bunch of basketball players in this circumstance, why don't they charter a plane, or can you not do that?
Yeah, I don't. That's not from Romania right now. It's not really an option. There are people doing it from some other countries, but no country around there is kind of doing that right now.
Okay.
And from what the way he was explaining it, and obviously his wife is talking to all the airlines as well. If he could get to sort of a middle ground area where you could do that, then he would be fine. But right now he doesn't have access. He doesn't have the proper paperwork to be able to get there. Not because he's sick or anything, just because basically no one's sort of giving him this temporary visa or giving him a waiver to be able to, you know, get out of there into somewhere else where he could then charter back.
I remember Romania. Romania became a big deal in sports through tennis because Ilya Nastase was Romanian, and Ion Tyriac was Romanian. And I think, didn't they have a bunch of gymnasts?
Gymnasts, definitely, yes.
Gymnasts who were Romanian. Was Nadia Comăneci Romanian, was she not?
I believe so.
I think so. So that, so Romania became, it bubbled up in the 70s and 80s, and people in the United States began to know about it. But I don't know, I mean, I don't know anything about it. But
yeah,
it doesn't sound great.
My wife was over there years ago. She, you know, they had a terrible situation there with orphanages. So Lauren went over and spent a pretty long period of time just sort of on a service trip. And she doesn't talk about it that much, to be honest with you, because it was
not
pretty
good.
Horrific. Yeah.
All right. So we'll get off that now. And I'm
yeah,
glad
well,
I.
So anyway, if anybody could help out, you know, Karan Johnson, I just figured we'd spread the word
sure.
a little bit.
People listen. People who listen to this show.
You've got some
eclectic.
Heavy hitters who you know,
we'll
I know are D.C. based and maybe government based. So, you know, just putting it out there.
Let me ask you about football. Roger Goodell, word for word, accepted all the terms of that miraculous video, I thought.
Yeah.
But we just had Wilbon on, and Wilbon is very skeptical. And I would the obvious questions are Jerry Jones. Jerry, if someone is going to stand in the middle of the road and say no, it would be Jerry Jones. What are your thoughts about the true commitment of the National Football League to help in this circumstance, to respond to their black players who have said, you've got to do this? It appears that Roger Goodell has taken the first step, but will the second, third, and fourth steps be thwarted, in your opinion?
I don't think so. I kind of feel like the players have checkmated the league here now, and the league stance is, from that statement, would seem to be unwavering. I didn't seem to be a whole lot of middle ground or you know, gray area or ability to equivocate. I mean, the words that Roger Goodell said were literally the words that the players said and the players wanted him to say.
Yep.
And the league now as a whole, I don't know how it could try to enact any sort of policy other than we support peaceful protest, and taking the knee is clearly what everybody's talking about here, and that is the very nature of the protest that caught the president's ire, you know, the first time around 3.5 years ago, whatever it was. And now not much has changed. Things have gotten worse in this country, and the same things that Colin Kaepernick was, you know, what started this movement organically, quietly, peacefully, individually, was him trying to bring more attention to wardens of the state continually killing American citizens for the color of their skin in our streets. And obviously, that's as big of an issue now as it's ever been. And the league is now standing in lockstep with Kaepernick without saying his name. And we'll see how they sort of navigate that.
Will they sign him?
I'm still very skeptical of that, Tony. I think that they've reached a point now where this is dragged out so far that you can start to hide behind football reasons, because it's like, well, he hasn't played in 3 years, and now Alden Smith just got signed by Jerry Jones. Go figure.
Yes.
And he hasn't played in 3 years, but then I think they'd make the case, well, it's different with a quarterback, although, I don't know, does it have to be? Is it really? Because of the pandemic, because of what's going on right now and no off-season programs, I think that's something else that would be working against them, because a guy's been out that long, you'd want to be able to have him in your OTAs and mini camps, and there's not going to be any OTAs or mini camps, and I think training camp might end up being really truncated. I don't know that it's going to be normal. I have a hard time thinking they're actually going to play 4 preseason games. I don't know why you really would. You make no money off them, and it's a possibility to you know, start sort of having things penetrate your bubbles. I don't know that there's a whole lot of risk reward gain from playing 4 preseason games.
But Jason, if Roger Goodell is an effective commissioner, and I say this of anybody who is a commissioner, and he feels it's in the league's best interest now to have Colin Kaepernick on a team, he will make that happen.
Well, he's been trying to make it happen, according to the league, for quite some time. So, I mean, could someone do it? It's possible. It's more possible now than I would have said, you know, 5 days ago, 5 weeks ago, 5 months ago. But I don't know that it's probable. And we'll see. I'll be very interested week one. And this is, I don't think it's going to be a normal week one. I don't think there's going to be a great likelihood of fans in the stands unless maybe they push things back a little bit. So I don't know that you're going to have the normal pomp and circumstance you would week one. But if it is, then it sort of begs the question to me. Obviously, Roger would be at multiple games that weekend. You know, he'd probably be at one game on Sunday. He'd probably be, you know, the Monday night game, one of the
Thursday.
Monday night games, too. Yeah, the kickoff game that Thursday. Yeah. Would he take a knee with players? So that, to me, is
that's
sort
what,
of the,
yeah.
The
so
next
what,
step.
Let's circle back to Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is the most prominent owner, might not
yeah.
be the most popular, but he's a great no. businessman, and he has publicly said, you can't work for me and do this. You just can't. He's the guy that I think everyone looks to. You know him a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen?
I don't know. I mean, look, he is proven he's not above putting himself before the league, and he certainly was taking end runs and various sort of shots at Goodell when Goodell's contract was last
yep.
up. And he was trying to rally support, but what the sort of ugly truth for him was, it didn't really get him anywhere. He as big as he is, he couldn't pull off that mutiny. He didn't even really get that close, and kind of had his tail between his legs a little bit at the end there. And given where the league is now, and after Roger, you know, made his second statement and read the statement that the players wanted him to make. You know, I checked with some people at the league. I'm like, well, this obviously is the policy now, right? Like, I know you didn't have a vote about it, and not all the owners got together and confabbed about it, but there doesn't seem to be the ability to walk this back. You cannot be in a position now as a league where you're in any way trying to punish or prevent players from doing
That's
this.
Right.
And the response
That's right.
I got was, yeah. You know, we didn't look. We had a couple, two or three players who kneeled all last year. They weren't sanctioned. They weren't punished in any way, and that will continue to be the case. So I think even if Jerry does try to go rogue, I think it would backfire on him. And I think Jerry got very lucky the last time around when it seemed he tried to throw verbal Molotov cocktails into his locker room. Because if you recall, I believe the SOB stuff came down, and the Cowboys were about to go on a bye, and nobody there had kneeled, and nobody there had even contemplated kneeling or talked publicly about, hey, we might do this. It was something that Jason Garrett, I think, kind of thought he had a handle on. And then Jerry just came out and started, hey, I forbid you to do this, and there will be consequences, and that's not yeah. how it happens here. You know, he kind of went on his diatribe, and then it created a lot of problems for the players and coaches. And it almost blew up in his face then. I think if he were to try to create a separate set of rules for the Cowboys, I don't know how it would fly sort of legally at this point. And at some point in the culture and what's going on in this country right now and people finding their voice and people making statements, I have a hard time thinking somebody in that locker room wouldn't stand up to Jerry Jones, and that could get pretty ugly. And I think there's other people in that organization who share the last name Jones who are probably some of the few people on the planet who could explain that to him.
That's exactly how I think it's going to happen. I think he's going to be dragged along with everybody else, and he's going to find out. And if you're an owner, what you think of privately, is this good or bad for business? And it's going to be good for business. It is.
I mean, at this point, like, every corporation has put out some sort of statement. Now, you know, some stronger than others. You know, some including police brutality, you know, the actual words police brutality. Some not. Some including Black Lives Matter. Some not. But clearly there's a lot of people in sort of the business community and a lot of people who are involved in massive economies of scale who have decided that the temperature, you know, has shifted and the tenor
yes.
has shifted. And
yes.
we better be at least somewhat tiptoeing towards the right side of history or we're really going to stand out for all the wrong reasons. And I think these owners are they have to be grasping that as well.
I would certainly think. Jason, thank you. We'll talk soon. Hope
Always
we can help
pleasure,
your friend.
Buddy. Thank you. Have a good one, bud.
Jason Luckin, Flora Boys and Girls. Oh, it's Copper. There's Copper barking in the background. How great is
Copper.
That? We'll take a break. We'll have email and a jingle when we return. We will certainly mention Bethesda Bagels when we return because we failed to do that before. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I think about odd things. I'm walking. I think about odd things.
When I'm out walking, I think of odd things. Since it's quarantine, like I don't believe in drive-thrus. I like to walk in. Got no time for pneumatic tubes.
Look how great is Kirsten.
I don't believe in drive-thrus.
I stop to let chassis piddle, and as my thumbs begin to twiddle, my thoughts drift to COVID-19.
Don't get close to anybody.
Just as we are resuming, I feel a presence looming. I scream, don't you dare walk up on me.
Don't you do that.
When I'm out walking, I think of odd things. It's not like I'm counting, cause that's as normal as can be. When I'm out walking, I think of odd things. That's so unlike me.
I think about odd things.
When I'm out walking.
That's Kirsten Ohnstad, and she's doing Patsy Cline, and that is brilliant. Nigel, that is brilliant.
It is. It really is. Kirsten's
so great.
Just great.
Yeah, that'll just about do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank our new sponsor today, Wolf's Tooth Dog Food. Good food for mean dogs, now featuring three bold flavors, rat, raccoon, lizard. Thanks to our guests today, NBC's Leon Harris, Michael Wilbon, Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports. Thanks as well to our sponsors, Policy Genius and ExpressVPN. Remember that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Peter Jennings, Bethesda Bagels.
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well, too. BethesdaBagels.com, open every day from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the one we go to in Bethesda, 4819 Bethesda Avenue. Stop on by and check them out. We love them.
Our friend Peter Jennings wrote, I enjoyed the dialogue about the wine ambassador from Oregon and how to properly address same. To do humble Wilbon name drop, I was thrilled to host a dinner in Tokyo for then Ambassador Caroline Kennedy. When I introduced her to notable business executives, she politely insisted they refer to her as simply Caroline. When I asked how I might address her, she succinctly said, you should refer to me as Madam Ambassador. That is great. From Henry Hakim, a loyal little in Vienna, Virginia. You must tell us more about Uncle Benny. I'm just intrigued about his life as a single guy ended up with a dining room table in the first place. I mean, who was the guy eating with except when he invited you over and the relatives? Maybe he had some pets. I always smile knowing you and Michael having the podcast there. I imagine you sitting at the head of the table like Sonny Corleone in The Godfather and Michael on the side. Michael would want to discuss podcast hat sales, and you just say, like Sonny Michael, we don't discuss business at the table. Uncle Benny was married to Aunt Adrian. They had no children. He was not a single guy. Ultimately, Aunt Adrian died before he did, and he willed the table to me. This was navigated by my Aunt Shirley, because everybody else in the family, as I said, got money, and I got a table, and I've got the last laugh. From Jim Bay in Baldwinsville, New York, outside of Syracuse, I've listened to your recent shows about the woman who's a wine ambassador. I thought that you would like to know that I hold a similar job. Last summer, when I retired from teaching, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage suggested I take a part-time job to keep busy and help defray the cost of the extra golf I'd planned on playing. Searching through an online job site, I came across an ad for bourbon ambassador and was proudly hired by Black Button Distilling out of Rochester, New York. Up until the recent closures, I traveled around the area sharing their fine products with others. And yes, I do have some family and friends who refer to me as Mr. Ambassador. From Mark Margarita, I'm from East Meadow, Long Island. My family owned a Chicken Delight. Back in the day, I know you're from the same area. It brings back good memories. There was a chicken that he thought looked like Chicken Delight, but that was actually something Michael made in grade school when we had that up last week. Did you see that,
yeah,
Michael?
Yeah, from first grade.
Yeah. From Steve LePoe in Lone Tree, Colorado. I wanted to take a moment to share my second David Aldridge moment. My first David Aldridge moment was when I ran into him in the Denver Nuggets locker room when he was announcing for Turner, and I was working as a freelance assistant cameraman. This was 2014, shortly after he had presciently predicted the injury of Robert Griffin III. The era of unbridled enthusiasm is over, I said, but lest I digress. As many, I felt that I've spent too much time in quarantine watching TV. But this brings me to a day recently as I was binging my way through the television show Turn. And there he was, Season 1, Episode 5, George Washington, His Excellency himself, played by the friend of the show, Ian Khan. I know that guy, I screamed out loud to no one. There's also a significant character in your show, in that show, named Major Edmund Hewlett of the British Army. Maybe he is a relative of the namesake of your alma mater. I didn't immediately make the connection because you never pronounced the H. Because it's Hewlett. Well, how am I supposed to pronounce it? From Alex Sankey in Cave Creek, Arizona, an update to my May 1st email. It's now June 1st, and the Orioles are still tied for the division lead.
I was hoping Jason would give us a draft preview.
Yeah. From Jimmy Purse in Silver Spring, my neighbor is a scientist who does core sampling in Antarctica. My dog is a French bulldog named Eleanor Pigby, who weighs 25 pounds. For lunch, I had a kale Caesar salad from Sweetgreen. Finally, the June gloom is what happens in California when the fog rolls in on the coastal cities and makes everything gray and gloomy during the month of June. Please tell Michael. From Peter in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, you had a bread man and a milkman growing up. Great. Sounds like everyone had those. The real question is, did you have a cheese boy? No, I was fortunate enough to avoid that. From Peter Appleby in Del Mar, New York, you were quite surprised to hear that someone was old enough to have had a milkman and an eggman. Well, Grandpa, good news for you. A lot of people still have a milk and egg man. I live just outside Albany in a suburban town, and we have a dairy about 10 miles away, Meadowbrook Farms and Dairy, that delivers wonderful milk in old-time glass bottles and other dairy products every Thursday to my house. I'm not affiliated with the dairy, but I imagine they would love to be the official upstate New York dairy of the show. See, it is still 1950 in some parts of the country. Not sure what dairies deliver in Broome County. That's where Binghamton is. But I'm sure there are more than a few. And he attached a picture of his milk box from the Meadowbrook Farms Dairy, which is very, very lovely. Do I have time for one more that's very long?
Let me check. Yes, you do.
This is from Gary Nelson in Goodyear, Arizona. In 1992, I relocated from Washington to Phoenix, Arizona. I listened to your show when it was on ESPN, and it helped me with missing living in D.C. When you'd talk about the Beltway or Duke Siebert's, I would shout, I know that place. And my wife, related through marriage, Stephanie, would say, what are you talking about? I would tell her about your reference to our former home, and it made me happy. She would say, I have a problem. I need a hobby. I'm originally from Hempstead, Long Island, the Peninsula Boulevard exit, and have thoroughly enjoyed your recent references to places near and dear to my heart, like Dairy Barn, Mineola, Roslyn. Here's a few more Long Island references for you and other Nassau, Suffolk natives. Eisenhower Park, where I worked in the summer, driving skate mobiles and snowmobiles, county trucks with trailers to park like Caneog and Westbury and Jones Beach, Modell's on Hempstead Turnpike, the best donuts in the world before they became a sports store. They did donuts, apparently. Kennedy Park in Uniondale, the park where Long Island's own Dr. Julius Irving honed his basketball skills. And King Cullen on Baldwin Road, right across the street from the dairy barn of my youth, where I heard my mother yell to the clerk, we're out of 20s. You can imagine my laughter when you recently had a guest recount this from his parents when he was growing up. My wife once again asked why I was laughing so loud. I told her that Mr. Tony's talking about days on Long Island. It's making me happy. She responded, and after 25 years, you still haven't found that hobby. Thanks for helping me keep my Northern and Southern State Parkway memories alive. Keep the Long Island references coming. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Great cash, homie.
Wake up for your
say hallelujah in the absence of love. I said, hallelujah.